The Come This Far podcast is brought to you by adsuits.com. AD Suits designs the most affordable, inexpensive, high-quality men's suits, tuxedos, shirts, ties, and accessories that you can buy online. AD Suits believes in a down-to-earth approach to men's fashion and that the most stylish suits should be accessible to everyone. Looking sharp shouldn't cost a fortune. How do they do it? They have amazing suits starting at $39. I know it sounds like a gimmick. Trust me, I thought it was too. When I started running for office, when I became an elected official, I had like one suit. I would wear it to church, I would wear it to funerals, but I realized that running for office and being an elected official, I had to have more than one suit, but I didn't want to pay $500 for a suit or even $100 for a suit. So I went to adsuits.com. I found it on Google, and guess what? They're my favorite suits. I wear them all the time. I have like five of them because they cost $49 each. Some of them cost $39 each. How do they do it? Well, by manufacturing their own suits, they cut out any middleman. And also by operating only online, no brick and mortar stores, they eliminate expenses. So in the end, they can bring you a nice suit for under $50. And they're not cheap. They're not cheap. They feel the same as my $500 suit that was gifted to me by my father. Okay? They are amazing. And you don't feel like you have to be restricted, because if you get it messed up, if you tear it, if you get it stained, it's only $40. Who cares? Throw it away and buy a new one. That's the way suits should be. And they should be comfortable, and they should be well fitted, and they should look nice, but they should not be a fortune to wear. So do yourself a favor, go to adsuits.com today. You won't be sorry. You know, some people think that I tell my story to get praise or to, you know, be on the news or be on shows like this. And you don't realize how difficult it is to become so vulnerable and to open your family up to that scrutiny. But I know how important it is, because when a news segment airs, I get hundreds and sometimes thousands of comments and messages and people who are suffering in silence, and they tell me how much inspiration they get. And so I don't want my struggles and everything that I've suffered to be in vain. Like, I really believe that God gives people struggles and trials to overcome them and then to be that hope and help to other people.
And a Safford City Council member is suspending his campaign for Congress.
A Safford City Councilman has suspended his campaign for Congress after suffering a heroin overdose.
His name is Chris Taylor. You may actually know the name very well. It's been very publicized here in the Arizona media and the Arizona press.
Chris Taylor was running for the Republican nomination to challenge Democrat Tom O'Halloran this November.
And tonight, Chris Taylor says he is seeking treatment for substance abuse.
We first met Chris Taylor in 2017 as we dug in on the opioid problem plaguing the eastern Arizona city of Safford.
In a previous campaign ad, Taylor opened up about his struggles with opioid addiction after two tours in Afghanistan.
Taylor, a veteran who fought off addiction to open his own treatment center, was poised to be the success story for Safford. But he went backwards as old demons resurfaced last week. A relapse that resulted in an overdose. In a statement to suspend his congressional campaign, Taylor was very direct, saying, quote, "I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I wish to sincerely apologize to the amazing people who have supported me. It's a haunting reminder of a dark past that will always be looking over the shoulder of a bright future."
All right. right, everybody. Welcome to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. I'm your host, Chris Taylor. And today we're going to do a quick little bonus episode. I've been doing these little bonus 15, 20 minute episodes lately. I kind of am toying with this idea to put out a little bit more content in smaller lengths so that I can do more of what I want to do and not have to find an hour to fill up time. And that's what's kind of stood in the way of me doing some things that I want to do and I want to talk about, because it's hard to sit and talk for an hour without sounding redundant, without going on and on and on about the same subject. So that's what I'm doing today. I have been engaged with this quiz from the New York Times today that was released this morning. The quiz is, if America had six parties, which would you belong to? And the premise is right up my alley. I hate the two-party system. I refuse to be a part of either of the major parties, and I don't like any of the third parties. I just don't like them. And I just like to be a normal person that's able to have different views on different subjects. And today, increasingly, with the hyper-partisan nature and the over-politicization of every single issue and every single thing in this country, in the world, you either are a part of the left or a part of the right. And if you're part of the right and you don't agree with one issue, the way that the gang goes, then you're not part of the gang. You're a rhino. You're not a real Republican. You're not a real this and that. And that's true as well with the far left. If you don't agree with every single thing that they espouse, then you are not a real progressive. You're not a real liberal. And you're a threat to true progress. And I just don't like that. I just don't. And so I always am interested in different things. I read a lot of articles, a lot of books on this subject. And this one really intrigued me today. And I'll read a little bit from the project. It says, America's two-party system is broken. Democrats and Republicans are locked in an increasingly destructive partisan struggle that has produced gridlock and stagnation. Gridlock and stagnation on too many critical issues, most urgently the pandemic and climate change. There's no reasonable or timely way to fix this broken system, but there is an alternative: more parties. It's not hard to imagine a six-party system, and it would not even require a constitutional amendment. The description of how to get to such a system is below. But first, whether you are a Democrat, Republican, or independent, or other, in the 20-question quiz below, you can discover which new party you would be the best fit for you. Now, as with any of these type of things, when you have a 20-question quiz, it is not going to be perfect. It's not designed to be, you know, if it was a 1,000-word or 1,000-question quiz, you know, it'd be able to be more nuanced and more complex and everything else, but that's not what this is. But I believe that the way that the questions are posed in I believe that they are more, they are the way that they are worded, and you'll see, I'm going to read through each one, and then I'll also put this link in the description of this podcast so that you can go and take the quiz. You will hit a paywall on the New York Times if you've reached your limit of free articles. And if so, that's unfortunate, but I have a subscription in the New York Times. If you really, really would love to know what new party you would belong to, contact me and I will answer the questions. I'll go through the questions with you. But question number one, racial minorities have mostly fair opportunities to advance in the United States today. These are, you either strongly disagree, somewhat disagree, neutral, somewhat agree, or strongly agree. So for me, racial minorities have mostly fair opportunities to advance in the United States today. I disagree with that. I don't know. I guess I'll say somewhat disagree. It's the responsibility. It's question number two. It's the responsibility of the government to reduce the income differences among people. So this is like the income inequality, and should the government step in and take money from the wealthy and give to the poor, and, you know, redistribution of wealth. This is, of course, the whole premise behind the communism is taking over, socialism is taking over, our country is being destroyed. Is it the role of the government to reduce the income differences among people? I would somewhat disagree with that, although, like I said, this is not perfect. I do believe that there needs to be more of an equal system, but I'm not sure if the government is the right entity to take care of that sort of thing. Question number three, should same-sex marriage be legal? Now, this is a loaded question, of course, because if you are a Christian or a member of a Christian church, your faith tells you that being gay is a sin. And so same-sex marriage should not be legal. This is one of those social questions that I tend to believe that the government should not be involved in. I just don't care what people do. I'm for equal rights for people. I have a gay brother. I am just so over this fight, right? This whole divisive fight. If a man wants to marry another man, this is America. Why should they not have the same rights as everybody else? That's where I stand on it. So should same-sex marriage be legal? This is a yes or no question. I put yes. Gun control laws should be stricter, no change, or less strict. This is another question that's not perfect. Those of you who know me know that I am a huge gun proponent. I own guns. I love guns. I shoot guns. I'm a combat veteran. I train and I remain proficient with my firearms. I believe in the Second Amendment wholeheartedly. I think that there are enough restrictions, and that more restrictions are just when they're made by people who are completely ignorant to guns, and they just do it as a way to appease the far left or what have you. I don't like that. I think that background checks are great. We should find ways to make that system more effective and efficient. But I don't agree that there should be stricter gun laws. So the question here is, gun control laws should be stricter, no change, or less strict? I go back and forth on this. Sometimes I think maybe less strict, and sometimes I say no change. I guess just for the sake of this, I'll put no change. I'll click no change. How easy or difficult should it be to immigrate to the United States? Much easier, slightly easier, no change, slightly harder, or much harder? Having some firsthand experience with this earlier in my life, I was involved with a woman that was not a citizen of this country, and she was doing everything the right way. She was brought over here as a political refugee when she was 15 or 14 years old. So she was a child. She had no say in the matter. Her mom fled Hugo Chavez's reign in Venezuela, and so she was somebody that was putting herself through college and getting a degree in as an interpreter And I just remember the how difficult the system was to navigate to be a legal citizen and a legal resident. The amount of money that she had to spend on attorneys and everything. It just didn't seem, I don't know, it just seemed so difficult. Which is why so many people try to skirt that system and just come over illegally. And so with that firsthand experience, I think that it should be slightly easier. I still think there should be a process, and I still think there should be laws, and a country with no laws and no borders, it fails to be a country. But we should have an easier process for people that want to do it the right way, and they want to be legal citizens of this country. So I put slightly easier on that. This is question 6. Do you favor or oppose providing a way for undocumented immigrants already in the United States to become citizens? This is another hot button issue with people. There's been some very strong Republican candidates in the past that have said that they do support, because look, you have to be pragmatic about this. There's millions and millions and millions of undocumented immigrants in here that came over illegally, and it's just not feasible to round them all up and ship them back to their countries. We can debate all day about what we need to do to strengthen the border and to strengthen our laws and our systems, but what do you do with the people that are already here? If you say that you support providing a way for undocumented immigrants already in the United States to become citizens, then you're for amnesty, and you're a rhino, and you're this and that. What I don't like about this issue is that it always seems to be dehumanized, right? We always seem to take the human factor out and look at these poor innocent people as numbers or as criminals, or and I just think that's wrong. And if you're a self-professed Christian follower of Christ, then I think that that's being a hypocrite. I understand having strong borders and the need to have strong laws and law and order and all of that. But we find ourselves in the position now where there are people that have made lives here, that have families and young children, and that do contribute to the diversity of our country, which is a good thing, and contribute to the economy. There's many people that say, many experts, economic experts, that say that if you went and rounded up all of the undocumented immigrants and you shipped them, every single one of them out, then our economy would crash. So I agree that there should be a way, an easier way to provide a path of citizenship for people, whether or not they came over here legally or illegally. And then we need to fix that. And then we need to fix our systems and our laws and go from there. Question number 7. I think abortion should be legal in all cases, legal in some cases, and illegal in others, or illegal in all cases. Of course, this is another issue that is at the heart of the culture wars. Those people on the far right that say that anybody who supports any type of abortion is a Satanist. They just want to kill babies. This ties into the larger conspiracy about the QAnon stuff, about aborted fetuses being consumed by these wealthy elites and these pedophile Democrats and Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks and all these people. This is another issue that is that that the larger debate fails to humanize the people at the center of this. That 17, 18 year old child who due to whatever circumstances made choices and maybe even didn't make choices, were the victim of a sexual crime, or were just young and not wise in their actions, just like every single person is in their youth, and they're in situations where they are unable to take care of the baby, and they're not maybe not educated on some of the other options and everything else. This is not a black and white issue. I don't agree with abortion. I would not ask a partner of mine to have an abortion, but I also know that it's not that if somebody does decide to have an abortion, they are not automatically a Satanist or evil. I think that we need to make it easier, for one, to adopt children in this country. We need to make it more accessible for people to put their children up for adoption in unwanted pregnancies. I think we need to promote that much more. But this completely horrific law in Texas is in other places that are trying to ban abortions in all cases is just too extreme. I remember talking about last year about a case in Alabama where a 12-year-old, I believe, or maybe it was a child, a very young child, a 12-year-old was raped and impregnated and was unable to have an abortion. It would be thrown in prison for having an abortion with that heartbeat bill. There's no exceptions for rape or incest or anything else. And with the law in Texas, anything after 6 weeks is now illegal. People that have had abortions are not evil. I don't think there's anybody out there that is celebrating the fact that they've had an abortion or that are happy and joyous in having an abortion. The far right makes this issue into something that it's not, where they make it seem like people who are making this horrible decision, that this horribly difficult decision, whether to have an abortion or not have an abortion, the anguish that they must go through, the everything else is, they take that out of it and they make it seem like there are just these evil Democrats and liberals that just want to kill babies. And that's just not the case. And it's just so sickening to me that is where the debate is. So in this question, I put it should be legal in some cases and illegal in others. Question number eight, American society systematically advantages white people. I somewhat agree with that. This is a question where you strongly disagree, somewhat disagree, neutral, somewhat agree, or strongly agree. American society systematically advantages white people. I agree with that. Question number nine, wealthy people spur innovation. This is another one of those strongly disagree, somewhat disagree, neutral, somewhat agree, strongly agree. I agree with that. I'll put somewhat agree. Local government should decrease the size of police forces and the scope of their work. This is where we get into another. This is where this question is not perfect, because of course you've heard my if you've listened to this podcast, have heard my take on the whole defund the police movement and how that's really not what the movement is about. The movement is really about trying to reimagine the way that policing works in America, so that we can have more of a specialized approach to some of our social issues that police officers are just not equipped to deal with. And so I don't agree that the size of the police forces should be should be shrunk. I believe that the police forces should change in that we should provide more expertise, more specialized training for individuals to work for police departments or municipalities, to provide that expertise in instances of mental health crisis, in addiction issues, so that the police, the people with the gun and the badge, can go and have that burden taken off of them and allow them to fight the crime that they and only they are equipped to fight. The problem we have now is we are so burdened by social issues, mental health crises, and everything else, and we're treating all of these things as a criminal issue. And so that the real people, the real criminals, are operating with impunity, unscathed. And that's not good either. So I would, on this is another thing where this is more nuanced, more complex than this question. But with, I understand what they're doing with this question. If you answer, they kind of will be able to glean where you are on that issue. So as far as police forces and the scope of their work, I put somewhat agree. How do you feel about reducing government regulation of businesses? I agree with that. I am a fiscal conservative. I'm a pro-business person. I think that too much government regulation is a bad thing, and it stands in the way of innovation. It stands in the way of job growth. It stands in the way of economic prosperity. So how do you feel about reducing government regulation of business? I strongly agree with that. Today, discrimination against white people has become as big a problem as discrimination against black people and other minorities. I disagree with that. Someone disagree. It is the responsibility of the federal government to see to it that everyone has health coverage. This is another one of those things that's very hot button. It's very debated. And I go back and forth on this, to be honest. I believe that everybody should have health care. I believe that there's major changes that need to come in our health care. I agree that the way that healthcare works is broken, the healthcare system. I don't, it's just so complex though. And it's not as easy as reducing it to, to this question. But I think that hospitals and doctor's offices should operate more like other services industries do. You take your car into the shop, you know exactly what a service costs. So you have to get an oil change, or you have to have a tire rotation, you have to have whatever the case is, that those prices are listed, and you're allowed to go and get different quotes and estimates from different shops. And you know that this place charges $100 for this service, this other place down the road charges $85. And you can go and look and see if people have talked about their experiences with these different auto shops, and you can make that decision. With our healthcare, you can't do that. You have insurance. You can only see this doctor or this other doctor based on your insurance provider. And you have no idea how much something costs. And then you get the bill later on. And it's like, you charged me $300 for an Advil. Like, do you see what I'm saying? So there's major changes that need to happen. I don't know, though, that it's the government's job to provide universal health care. I just don't know. So on this, for this question, for this exercise, I have to put neutral. Question number 14. How important is the issue of climate change to you? This is another one of those things where it's just, I don't know enough about it. This is another one of those issues where you hear so much noise on both sides. You have one side that says that climate change is in fact the number one issue that we face. It is completely, entirely man-made. And our decisions are the human beings of this country, or excuse me, this world, have directly contributed to climate change. And if we don't do something about it, then we will destroy our planet. Some people say within 10 years. I mean, Al Gore said that 25 years ago. But I'm also have eyes, and I see the amount of horrific, cataclysmic, catastrophic storms. I live in a place where there never used to be any storm damage. There maybe was a flash flood every 10 years that did some damage. In the last 3 or 4 years, and one just happened this last weekend, major damage from gale-force winds and hailstorms in the middle of the summer and roofs completely destroyed and major trees uprooted. And you see what's happening in the Gulf Coast every year now during hurricane season. There's major, 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 major losses of life and property. And I don't know, though, if how much our decisions, you know, our oil consumption and our everything else, our pollution, I don't know how much of that is contributed by human decisions, and if we can reverse those. And likewise, with some of those changes, how catastrophic will those changes be to our economy, to our jobs, to our families that have jobs that provide food and shelter for their families? But I also don't subscribe to the fact that it's all a hoax, and that it's all just a scheme to make money and to tax us and everything else. I just don't know enough about the issue to be educated on it, to speak intelligently about it. But it is important. It is very important. And I think that this is another one of those issues where the hyper-partisan nature of our system right now completely stands in the way of finding real answers and therefore real solutions. So how important is the issue of climate change to you? It is somewhat important to me. I just don't know enough about it to speak intelligently on it. And I try to educate myself. And I'm always faced with information that is skewed and spun politically. And it's just, it makes me angry, and I shut down, and I just don't know where to go about that issue. We're on question number 15. I'm gonna take a short little break, and we'll be back with more of this interesting quiz from the New York Times about where would you stand if we had a six-party system instead of a two-party system that is destroying our country. We'll be right back after this. Thanks for listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. Moving right along, question number 15. An important reason some people are poor is because the economy is unfair. This also has racial undertones or overtones, whatever you want to call it. I do agree that that the economy is unfair to certain groups of people. I tend to see it more of a class issue and less of a race issue. But it's just the fact of the matter. You are born into a wealthy family. You have certain advantages, and it's just the way it is. And anybody who says that that's not the case, by pointing to anecdotal evidence of somebody who has completely, was born into poverty and completely is a man-made, success, a man-made millionaire. Then they point, say that, see, anybody can do, anything if they put their mind to it. And I agree with that. And I still believe in the American dream, but I would be foolish to say that, that a lot of people are poor and a lot of people are in circumstances that they're in to no fault of their own. And that's an important thing, an important issue to talk about when talking about economic growth and economic equality and everything else. So an important reason some people are poor is because the economy is unfair. I somewhat agree with that. Question number 16. This is a question where there is so much more complexity and nuance that needs to go into it, but I understand what the New York Times is trying to do by asking this question. The question is, should marijuana be legal? Strongly disagree, somewhat disagree, neutral, somewhat agree, or strongly agree. By asking this question, they are basically implying that most of the people who would agree that marijuana should be legal also agree that we need to look at our issues as far as drugs concerned, the drug war, the failed war on drugs is concerned, and look at more of our issues as a public health issue, not a criminal issue. The way that we fight the war on drugs is completely and utterly a failure. And I think even the most conservative people at this point can get to that point to admit that. But this is a political non-starter for any politician. If they came out and said that we need to decriminalize all drugs or legalize all drugs or anything else, that is a radical hippie liberal position to have, and you know, it would be political suicide to have that stance. So we end up getting nowhere on helping people that have addictions that are in the positions that they're in. It's just a never-ending cycle. We lock them up, we throw them in prison, we take them away from their children, we damage lives, we destroy families, and we get nowhere. Because then the person gets out of prison with a criminal record, a felony on their record, and they're not able to provide economic prosperity for their family. And then the cycle continues and everything else. So asking this simple question, should marijuana be legal, is more of a loaded thing when you only have a 20 question quiz to find out which new party you would belong to. There is more into this, but I somewhat agree that at this point, marijuana should be legal. You should not be throwing people in prison for smoking marijuana. Regardless of where I stand religiously on that, I just don't agree that somebody should be able to get wasted on alcohol, get drunk, get completely destroy lives, and that's legal, and that's looked at as, well, you know, it's just how crazy so and so, you know, they drink a lot of beer. And then somebody who's in jail, sitting in jail for marijuana, that's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So I would somewhat agree that marijuana should be legal. Question number 17, when it comes to really important questions, scientific facts don't help very much. This is another one of those kind of loaded questions. I think that, you know, this has some we see this a lot, right? With some of the biggest issues that we face, where one group of people or both or more than one group of people tends to completely disregard scientific facts and scientific evidence. And one of those issues, one of those that happens is with the science of addiction and how we fight the war on drugs. That's a very important issue. And if we would simply listen to the medical advancements and the scientific evidence that exists, then we would do something different. And it would save lives, and it would improve lives, and it would improve various parts of our society. Another part where this is present is with the climate change issues and also with the pandemic. Many people completely disregard scientific evidence and facts for political reasons. So listen, when it comes to really important questions, scientific facts don't help very much. I would strongly disagree with that. Question number 18. I would rather be a citizen of the United States than any other country. This is a pretty straightforward question. I strongly agree with that. I have traveled to different countries around the world. I've spent time in other countries. I've been around many people that grew up and live in different countries. And despite all of our issues, I would rather be a citizen of the United States than any other country. And I strongly agree with that. Question number 19, should the government raise taxes on incomes above $200,000? This question would have said above $400,000. Because I think it would have got a lot more support from people. And this question, this is a yes or no question. I tend to agree that the ultra wealthy, the billionaires, should definitely pay more fair share of their taxes to provide, you see it all the time that these ultra rich people get away with paying little to no taxes while those of us in the lower tax brackets pay an exorbitant percentage of our income to the government. And that's just not fair. And I understand that if you take that position on any level of income, then you're a socialist, you're a communist, you're this and this and that, this and that, this, and you're against businesses and you're this and that. So I wish that this question would have been incomes above 400,000 or 600,000 or whatever. I don't think that I could go and say that that the government should raise taxes on incomes above 200,000, because I understand that somebody that makes 200,000 in this country today is not rich. They just aren't. They're comfortable. They can provide a good living and for their families, but they're not wealthy. And so I, on this question, have to answer no. Question number 20, last question. The minimum wage should be raised. Strongly disagree, somewhat disagree, neutral, somewhat agree, strongly agree. I somewhat agree with that. Somewhat agree. So when you answer those 20 questions, it comes out and where you are is plotted on a graph. There are six parties of our new political system, hypothetical political system. There is the Patriot Party. There is the Christian Conservative Party. There is the Growth and Opportunity Party. There is the American Labor Party. There is the Progressive Party. And there is the New Liberal Party. So where did I come out? For some reason on this one that I just went through, it has me as you are closest to the Growth and Opportunity Party. here is the makeup of each party breaks down across. Anyway, so the Growth and Opportunity Party is the socially moderate pro-business wing of the Republican Party. It is the heir to the old moderate Rockefeller Republican, or the East Coast wing of the GOP. Its potential leaders today include Larry Hogan, Charlie Baker, Mitt Romney, John Kasich, and Michael Bloomberg. Based on data from the Democracy Fund's voter survey, this party would be the best fit for about 14% of the electorate. So with this thing, and I'll go and read what it means for each party. I have taken this quiz a number of times, and at least a portion of the times it has come out has me as part of the New Liberal Party. The New Liberal Party is the professional class establishment wing of the Democratic Party. Members are cosmopolitan in their social and racial views, but more pro-business and more likely to see wealthy as innovators. Its potential leaders include Pete Buttigieg, Cory Booker, Eric Garcetti, and Beto O'Rourke. Definitely the potential leaders, I would identify more with the Growth and Opportunity Party. And I don't know quite how, because I have to take this like 10 times and see where it comes out. It's very close probably though, because when I show the graph, I am right in the middle in terms of economically conservative or progressive. I'm right there in the middle. And as far as socially conservative, or socially progressive, I am towards the middle, but leaning more to the progressive side of things. And I think just maybe based on if I answer one of those questions with strongly agree or somewhat agree or strongly disagree, somewhat disagree, it may skew me from the Growth and Opportunity Party or the New Liberal Party. But I'm right there between both of them. And that makes sense because I like Pete Buttigieg. I don't like Beto O'Rourke. I don't really know enough about Cory Booker or Eric Garcetti to know where I stand on them. But I definitely am a Mitt Romney supporter, a John Kasich supporter, Charlie Baker and Larry Hogan, Michael Bloomberg. Sometimes maybe I agree with him, but there you have it. So let me go real quick and show you what it means, all of these different six parties. The Progressive Party, I think you can pretty much guess what that means. The Progressive Party is focused on equity and racial justice with a strong vision of inclusive social democracy. Its strongest support comes from politically engaged, highly educated younger people, especially women. Its potential leaders include Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Elizabeth Warren, or Julian Castro. Based on the data from the survey, this party would be the best fit for about 14% of the electorate. So let me read this real quick. And this is provided on each party. It says each party represents a different portion of the electorate, not only ideologically, but also economic class and political engagement. There is no center party here. That is because there are very few voters in the middle across all issues. Many readers who consider themselves centrist might also think of themselves as socially liberal / fiscally moderate or socially moderate / fiscally conservative. They will find a home in either the New Liberal Party or the Growth and Opportunity Party. That's where I fall, right between those two. These six parties reflect the underlying factions and divides within the Democratic and Republican parties. Until American politics nationalized in the 1980s and 90s around divisive culture war issues, they operated more independently within the two major political parties. We get to such a system through proportional, multi-member districts. This approach features districts much larger than our current tiny congressional ones, and each elects more than one person at once to represent the region. So more than one party could represent a district in proportion to their popularity within that large district, just as they do in most advanced democracies. Legislation introduced in the current Congress, which is the Fair Representation Act, would require use of multi-member districts with ranked choice voting in most states' House elections, as well as elections for the Senate. If more parties emerged, coalitions across parties would form to elect a speaker and organize committee assignments, just as coalitions form in multi-party legislatures around the world. Multi-party democracy would facilitate the shifting alliances and bargaining that are essential in democracy, but have largely disappeared in today's zero-sum conflict. The Senate would most likely become a much more freewheeling institution, as it was in the past. Absent reform to the Electoral College, presidential elections would still probably come down to two major candidates. However, with partisan loyalties less fixed, more voters would judge candidates on the content of their ideas and their character, rather than the D or the R next to their names. Moreover, a less hyperpartisan Congress will also most likely be less gridlocked and more productive, enabling it to reclaim a more central role in our national politics, thus lowering the stakes of presidential elections and potentially lowering the stakes for Supreme Court nominations in a new era of reduced partisanship. This is exactly what I have been harping about for so long. I don't know how they came up with six parties, but I am so intrigued by this. So intrigued by this idea. And it doesn't take a constitutional amendment to make this a reality. It takes a majority of the people to be supportive of it. And I think that if people would read this and that they would take this quiz, and I get it, this quiz is not perfect. The questions they ask are meant in a way to glean some things from somebody's ideologies that may or may not always be true. I get that. But I believe that it's pretty accurate. And it's very intriguing, is all I'm going to say. So I read the Progressive Party. The New Liberal Party is, of course, what I said, the professional class establishing wing of the Democratic Party. So the more moderate Democrats. Another party that is proposed is the American Labor Party. The American Labor Party is focused on economic populism, with an appeal to working class Democrats who don't have college degrees and don't follow politics closely. It is more moderate on social and cultural issues compared with the Progressive Party, but also more diverse, appealing to many working class Hispanics. Its potential leaders include Sherrod Brown, John Tester, and Tim Ryan. Based on the survey, this party would be the best fit for about 12% of the electorate. The Growth and Opportunity Party, and I think I read this as well. The Growth and Opportunity Party is a socially moderate pro-business wing of the Republican Party. It is the heir to the old moderate Rockefeller Republican. These are guys like Larry Hogan, Charlie Baker, Mitt Romney, John Kasich, and Michael Bloomberg. Although Michael Bloomberg is an independent, right? He ran for the Democratic nomination and then dropped out and backed Biden, but I think he was a Republican before, and he's an independent. So anyway, he's right there in the middle as well. One of the things I disagree with him on is gun control. And I think he was the mayor in New York when they placed a ban on 44-ounce sodas or sugary drinks, and I thought that was pretty crazy. So the Patriot Party. Yes, you guessed it. And I hate the fact that these people get to hijack the word patriot, because in my mind, they are nothing close to patriots. They are anti-patriots. But the Patriot Party is the party of Donald Trump, the coalition of the small town, white working class Americans who feel left behind by globalism and condescended to by cosmopolitanism. It is economically populist and strongly anti-immigration. Its strongest support is among lower income conservatives, comes from ex-urban America. Its potential leaders include Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, and Tucker Carlson. Presumably Sean Hannity and Donald Trump Jr. and Matt Gaetz as well, I guess. based on the data from this survey, this party would be the best fit for about 14% of the electorate. So everything is pretty equal across the board here as far as the percentage. The last party is the Christian Conservative Party. The Christian Conservative Party is focused centrally on issues of religious liberty and morality with very limited government. It will find stronger support among those politically engaged and affluent, especially men. Its potential leaders include Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, and Mike Pompeo. You see a lot of crossover here with the Trump people and this and these people. These are presumably the people that would be opposed to Donald Trump's immorality if they weren't hypocritical. And they kind of attached to Donald Trump as a way to get some of their other issues that they care about, and basically the power that it brought them. But Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Mike Pompeo were all big Trump people, of course. But in the Christian Conservative Party, they would, I presume, once again be more involved in morality issues, or at least have more credibility in morality issues, which they lost all credibility when they decided to declare unconditional allegiance to Donald Trump. So anyway, there you have it, people. I think this was great to go through each one of these questions. I will add this to the description here so everybody can take this quiz. Like I said, it's not perfect, but I think it's pretty accurate. Something needs to change. We this two-party system, I know we've been saying it forever and ever, but it is just, I'm just so over it. And there's so many of us that are just so over it. I think this movement or this idea could be a legitimate savior to our society and our political system here in America. And I'm eager to find where you land on this spectrum, on this graph, where you land and where you disagree with me on and where you agree with me on. Take this 20 question quiz and tell me where you are at in the comments. I will post on Facebook, and you can always email and contact me through the podcast page as well. Thank you for listening to this Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. This ended up being a full episode, so it's not a bonus episode. This will be the number 50th full episode of the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. Thank you all. Have a great week.